Hi there. This is Havila Kennington, and this is Havila's podcast. I'm really excited that you're here. And if you've been hanging out with us, you know we've been diving into the realms of relationships. We've hit a couple different unique relationships this month. One being we talked about high-functioning marriages, what it looks like to live in a marriage where you both are pioneering something and what it looks like to kind of live in that ecosystem and how do we do that well. So we had a conversation around that. Then we had another conversation around sex and intimacy and trust. That was such a great conversation with my friend Kate. High-functioning marriages were with Michelle. Then we had a conversation around the newlywed season, and we had our third year with us, Abby, and I talked about what it looked like to be a newlywed and some of the challenges that she was facing and had questions, and we talked all about that. So if any of those topics are you're curious about, jump back and go back and listen to a couple different weeks. But today I'm really excited to share, well, personally, solo, I'm solo today because I wanted to talk about the top 10 boundaries that I use as a woman in ministry, both using my personal experiences and biblical wisdom. Now, I know for some of you, you have been watching what's been happening in the charismatic world, and we have had some tragic news of a lot of the leaders that we believe to be integrous, transparent, healthy. We have seen that they have lived double lives, and those lives have been exposed. Now, as a believer, that might be surprising, but the Bible says whatever is done in secret will be shouted from the rooftop. So whatever we do that we think we're getting away with, it is God's mercy that exposes. Although it is tragic in so many ways, it really is his love and mercy that wants those that have been hurt or victimized to be healed. And there's a lot. I mean, it's not just one movement or one group of people. We have seen multiple men and women really, really have tragic falls in this season. And whether they were in New York or whether they were in Kansas City or whether they were in Chicago, there has been multiple stories in the news that has really been devastating. As a spiritual leader, I'll tell you what, I have felt shocked. I have felt angry. I have experienced wanting to be defensive, wanting to completely shut out anybody's thoughts or voices around it. I've also been obsessed with it in some ways. I want to talk about it and I want to look at everything that's out there around the topic because there's something so tragic and so human about what's been taking place in our culture. And it's frustrating because I think, gosh, the church should be a place where we grow the healthiest men and women. And if we follow what God says, then our lives should represent that integrity, that truth, that part. It doesn't mean that we're not vulnerable to mistakes. Doesn't mean that we haven't fallen. But I think there's a difference between making a mistake, repenting, and actually living a double life. And what I think we're witnessing is that everyone thinks it's the same thing. And I don't think it is. I think there are moments where, yes, it is a double life moment. Yeah, we did something wrong. We repented. We turned turned away. But then there are these stories of a double life, an actual double life where there is one thing happening, not just for months, but for years. And it's tragic. And I know for me, I get overwhelmed with the thought of how do we heal and how do we bring to justice what needs justice, but then also, you know, how do we move forward as believers? The church went through this range where one of the ranges was that everything was very strict. You know, it was men and women didn't do anything together. They didn't pray for each other. They didn't talk to each other. There was a very much of a strictness. And then we've kind of moved more into a little bit of a laxed experience. And let me tell you, I don't want to live in a strict, you know, guys and girls can't interact. A woman in ministry can't interact with a man in ministry. No, I want us to have healthy, good boundaries, but I don't want to be naive to the pitfalls, the realities that we can be hurt and we can hurt others if we don't have healthy boundaries. And boundaries are there to protect us. They're never about hurting us, or they're never about making our life smaller. They're always about protecting what matters most to us. And boundaries allow us to be protected when our mind is not in the game. You know, we have lines on the roads, not because, you know, we don't know where to drive or, you know, but it's when we're not really paying attention, we can look at the road and it's a double yellow and it means do not cross, or there's an opening and we know we can turn. And so our brain can actually relax when there's boundaries. We can go as fast as we want to go and we can, you know, turn we need to turn, and we know we're going to be safe because we're within those boundaries. So today, I've really never done a podcast on this. And part of it is, I don't think it helps anyone if you put rules out there, because then people just serve rules and they miss the heart of it. But what I'm finding is that some of the basic things that seem very normal or common sense is not very common sense these days. And so I want to say a few things, and I hope you have a heart for it. Not everyone this is going to relate to. Some of you will never experience this, and that's okay. I don't want you to. You don't have to have this. But I think it's important to understand that you are unique, that not everyone can live the way you're going to live, and it's okay to be different, and it's okay to have different boundaries. So these are the top 10 I could think of. Again, I'm sure that there's more that I've enlisted in my life, but these are the ones that I have lived out for almost 30 years, and they've really helped protect me as a woman in ministry, often by herself. And I can say to this day, I have always been faithful to my marriage. I've never had an indiscretion. I've never lived a double life. You know, of course, have I had opportunities? Absolutely. But I think a lot of these boundaries have helped me live that life. And so one of the first things that I learned early on in ministry was to not be alone with the opposite sex. And I don't mean alone like you can't have a conversation or you can't have a cup of coffee, but I'm talking about, as a woman, I think it's really important that we avoid being alone as a woman with either a married man or a single man, that we avoid being with them for a long period of time, just being alone and having kind of a uniqueness as a couple. You know, for me personally, this is my own, again, this is not a rule. This is not thus saith the Lord. This is a Havilah. I don't travel with men by myself. I don't travel with a man by myself, I should say. If there's a couple guys, I would travel, but I never just travel with a guy. I just don't. And I think it's not that I can't trust myself or I don't trust him. I think it doesn't sit well with those that see it. And I think it can be confusing. And it ends up being this unique kind of moment that you have together. And I think it's really important that you don't. Now, for me, Havilah, I don't go in cars by myself with guys if I can help it. I don't pick a plane seat next to somebody by myself. I'm saying somebody that I know. I really do try to be deliberate, to be inclusive, and to not have deliberate moments of being alone. Do I end up sometimes get caught in a moment where I'm in a meeting and it's just two of us? Or do I sometimes get caught in a car where somebody gets out and I'm there? I don't run out of the car and scream, I can't be by myself. No, but there's just an awareness that I'm alone and I'd like to bring somebody in, right? So one of the things I enlisted early on is I actually travel by myself, and I ask the church to get me a car, a rental car. Now, I know that that's a cost for the church. It's not always cheap, but I do that because I found early on that if I was being driven around, sometimes I would have a guy that was driving me around, a wonderful man. There was nothing he did weird, but it just didn't sit well with me for me to be in a strange city by myself with a guy driving me to my hotel room. I just thought, yeah, no, not worth it. Not going to do it. And so at one point I remember I had a driver drop me off. They had driven one of the speakers, dropped her off, and then I was the last one there. And the driver had said to me, hey, we always walk our speakers to the room. Can I walk you to your room? And I said, no, I know where my room is. Thank you so much. And I saw that kind of vulnerability of, you know, if you were not healthy, if you were not aware, the enemy can come in and really rob from you. And so I just drive by myself. It allows me to get off the airplane, get my car, drive to my hotel, and it helps me avoid any of that. And it really has been a great thing. And so for you, you might go, you know, actually, I'm just going to set up my life a little bit to have some separation so that I don't get caught in situations that can be confusing or misleading or even vulnerable. Another thing that I try to do is I don't text late at night. And again, these sound so, when I say it, it sounds like I'm part of the old school Christian world, but I promise I'm really trying to give you guys protection. So if a pastor texts me about something or somebody in my life, I don't send late night text messages. If I'm done speaking, I don't send them a late night, hey, thanks so much, it was great. I really tend to only text during work hours or during appropriate times. If you get a text message at midnight from me, I just don't think it's a great message. And I just think it's better to kind of keep it within a good boundary. So I don't text late at night. And if I was to get a text from the pastor, I would usually include their spouse. So if I respond, I usually will include the spouse or I'll mention the spouse and just say, hey, thank you so much to you and your spouse for having me. I really enjoyed being with you both. And I do bring them in on that. And I intentionally see them as a couple. Even if he's leading and I never see her, they are a couple. And I respect that. And so I have boundaries around that. And even if he doesn't think it's weird, I do. And so I want to make sure that she's included because the two will become one and they are one. So I just, late night text messages, I tend to not do that. You know, my brother-in-law, sure. My dad, you know, a friend, no big deal. But I'm talking about in ministry with men, I tend to keep that just during working hours or during, you know, daylight hours. And then the third thing I do is I don't DM. I actually don't use my socials and my DMs. Again, I think it's important that, can someone DM me? Yes. Do I have somebody else in my DMs? I do. I have a team member that's in there to help me. But I think it's important that we don't create opportunities where there can be kind of an inappropriate or misleading interaction. And I know that sounds weird, but all it takes is you saying one thing and they misinterpret it. Or, you know, you say one thing and you are all of a sudden in an inappropriate conversation. And it's only because nobody else is looking in and a DM is private. And so I personally try to just stay clear of that. I can do a ha or a yeah or whatever, but I don't communicate any kind of relational thing within a DM. I just don't. And that's just something that I have had my boundaries around. Again, you might be a powerful person in that way and it's not a big deal. But again, I just tend to avoid opportunities that it can become inappropriate or misleading. It just helps me. So the fourth thing that I do is I'm really honest with myself about chemistry. Now, I want you to understand when I use this phrase, I'm a happily married woman. My husband and I have incredible chemistry, right? And we love each other. It's nothing to do with my relationship. But when you're out in the world, whether you're a working woman or a woman in ministry, and you're not with your spouse, you're going to meet people that you have incredible chemistry. It might be friendship chemistry. It might be humor chemistry. It might even be attraction chemistry. And so I think it's really important that you're honest with yourself. Like you just recognize, you know what? I have really good chemistry with that person. Okay. And then you, as you're aware of that with yourself, you actually intentionally take a step back. You intentionally know, you know what? That makes me vulnerable because I feel my defenses going down because it's just easy. It's effortless. You find that people that have affairs, they say it was just so easy. It's like I could finally talk to somebody. Somebody finally thought I was interesting or it was funny. And so for me, the moment I sense that chemistry, I am very honest with myself. I'm aware, Havila, and there's no shame. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm a human being, but I take on that Proverbs 4:23, which is to guard my heart. And so by acknowledging it and addressing it in my life, like, hey, there's some chemistry, be careful. I guard my heart. I pull back. I protect my emotional self, my well-being. And they don't even know that I'm doing that, but I intentionally tell myself, Havila, take a step back. That's not going to be a good, that's going to be vulnerable for you. And so I'm just honest with myself. And sometimes I'm honest with a friend, or I can even be honest with my husband, not in a weird way, but like, babe, we had such good chemistry and I don't know. I just thought it was, you know, he texted me this, this is what was text. And I tend to, if there's anything that needs to be out in the open, I tend to kind of call its bluff, anything that wants to be a secret. And I just get it out, you know, read this text, look at this. I send it to my sister, look at this, this message, and it allows it to not be in secret. And so I'm really honest with myself and I don't shame myself. I don't dismiss it. I'm just honest about it. And then I have certain ways and certain things that I do to keep me safe in that way. And one of those is just admitting it. And even admitting it, you know, I was with a friend recently and we were talking about this person that she has great chemistry, friend chemistry with. And we were just talking and I just said, hey, how's it going? Are you sure it's going to be, you're going to be safe in that area? And she goes, gosh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I didn't even think anybody even would pick up on that. And I said, well, I'm not monitoring you, but I think you're a real person and I can tell there's chemistry and I want you to be safe. And she was fully honest. There wasn't anything going on, but it's just, it's real, right? So we don't need to avoid it like it's not real. It's real. And I think we get in trouble when we act like something isn't real and it is real. So that leads to my fifth point. And I love this one because I was listening to Dr. John Delaney. He's on YouTube and on the Dave Ramsey network. And he was quoting somebody that I had listened to often. Her name is Esther Perel. She's not a believer. She does not write as a faith person, but she does write on relationships and intimacy and infidelity. And he used a quote from her that I thought was brilliant. But she said, infidelity is anything that's a secret. And again, within the context of a relationship, she just said, anything your spouse can't know about is infidelity. Anything your spouse that you're hiding or anything you're not telling them is infidelity. And I think sometimes we think that infidelity is, you know, having a sexual relationship or infidelity is having an emotional relationship. But if we understand that infidelity starts when there's a secret, man, then that means the text message has to go away or the conversation, you know, or whatever. It allows us to understand that that is a line of infidelity that we have to really be aware of and protect. So, you know, remember, secrets have the power to erode our trust, our intimacy. And in Luke 8:17, it says, it reminds us that nothing is hidden that will not be disclosed. So it's important that in order to maintain a really healthy marriage or healthy relationship with God, if you're not married, it's really about transparency. It's about being open, and anything that wants to be secretive actually has the power to hurt us and harm us. So again, if there's a secret, if there's a text thread, if there's a DM messaging, if there's a relationship, if there's a past relationship with somebody in your life that you have not disclosed to your spouse, it is important that you do that, that you get whatever the enemy can hold over you, you get out into the open. I don't mean you tell them every gory detail. I don't mean, but you say, you know, I hadn't thought about this. I want you to know something because I want our marriage to be healthy. I don't want you to ever feel like I deceived you. And so here's the full truth of what that is. And it'll cost you something, but man, when you get it out there, it's really the only way to survive in a healthy marriage is to get it out. You have secrets. I have secrets. And the truth is that telling the secret is where the courage comes, right? It's not about not having a secret. There are things that we all have had that if it was to be in public, we would go, oh my gosh, I hope nobody knows. But once it's out there, it's very important. It's the way that we heal. You don't have to tell the world. You know, I've learned early on, I don't have to tell the world everything that I've dealt with or my husband or we've dealt with. That's our story. That's our journey. But I do have to tell him and he does have to tell me. And that's important. Okay. Number six. So not only is it, if it's a secret, it's infidelity, but number six is that I don't change my boundaries for spiritual leaders or spiritual fathers. Havila, what do you mean? What I mean is there's something in our culture where if we call somebody a spiritual mother or a spiritual father, we tend to let them in a little more intimately. We allow them to kind of be more affectionate with us and a little more, you know, like a father or like a mother. But we have to understand that they aren't our father and mother and that there is a vulnerability to that. And so for me, I just, in my life, I can have a spiritual father or spiritual leader in my life, but my boundaries don't change. If I'm not going to sit and hug somebody, I'm not going to sit and, you know, put my, embrace somebody. I'm not, and snuggle them. I'm not going to snuggle my spiritual father just because I call him father. I still am going to have boundaries because he's not my dad. And that's so painful. I get it. But I think the vulnerabilities is that when we start using spiritual mother and spiritual father, we tend to turn a blind eye to things that are not appropriate between two adults. And so I think it's really important that we don't use those words unless we mean it, but also if it changes our boundaries, then we don't use those words for a season. We keep it as a leader, pastor. And I think that's really important so that we don't let our boundaries fall apart because we want that kind of love or that connection or whatever that might be. We want to know that we want to have that respect and integrity in all of our interactions. And I've just seen it like a vulnerability in our culture that if somebody calls us family, then, you know, you're allowed to treat each other certain ways. And then it comes out later that it wasn't family. And if it doesn't seem right, it doesn't look right. Often it isn't right. Something is not quite right. And so I just tend to say, you know what? Even if you are like a spiritual father to me, I'm going to treat you like I would any other man in my life that I respect and love, but you don't get other access to me. And number seven, I don't discuss my marriage or my sex life with the opposite sex. Now, I want to be clear. That sounds so intense. I don't mean like I don't talk about, you know, things that Ben and I have dealt with or things that, you know, we're going through. I'm talking about that kind of conversation when somebody gets the inside view of your intimate relationship. And it starts out with the, yeah, me too. And I wish, you know, this, and I've had it before. And I think sometimes I can have that sister vibe where all of a sudden I'm with a guy that I is like a brother and we're talking and all of a sudden it gets into marriage or it gets into, I wish, and it feels intimate. And even though we're saying all the right things about marriage and God and purity and sex and all that, there's something about it that's intimate. It's something about it that is, it's just not appropriate. It leads to this connection that isn't necessary. And so for me personally, I don't go to people of the opposite sex, whether they're a great leader. I don't talk about my sex life. I don't talk about my marital struggles. Unless you are a therapist or unless, you know, you are a counselor that my husband and I are both seeing at the same time, I'm very careful, because it kind of ends up exposing this kind of sacred bond that you have. And I just have seen the enemy come in and all of a sudden you feel more seen and known and more connected to the person that's hearing about your marriage than you do in your marriage. And that's where the vulnerability is. And it happens so fast. It's not your fault. It happens so fast because you didn't even know it was a need. And now that need is being met and now you're vulnerable. So my recommendation is pick the people you're going to talk to about your marriage and you both agree upon it. And it's somebody that I think is your sex is probably the best way to do it. Okay. Number eight. I try to avoid any intimate ministry moments. Oh my gosh, I can feel you eye rolling, but just catch me on this. If somebody is having a ministry moment, like they're at the altar and they're weeping, I'm not going to get down on my knees and wrap my arms around them, even if I feel like a spiritual mother, even if I feel like they're a spiritual father. No. There are moms and dads in the room and the mom can hug the daughter and the father can hug the son. And it's a great way for those moments to happen. But I even see it when I'm prophesying sometimes, I can see there's this vulnerability. He's opening his heart. There's like this, you know me, and I often will do a few distinct things. So one of the things I often do is if I feel like it's going into an intimate ministry moment, and that can be tears, that can be just a vulnerability. I'll bring somebody with me. So I'll feel it. Okay. I can feel we're going this direction. So, hey, come with me. Or, hey, is this your wife? Come on over here for a minute. And I include somebody. And that's the best way to take it down out of intimacy into a vulnerability, but a safe place. So I recommend that you just bring somebody with you. I think even in therapy, in counseling or coaching or anything that has to do with the heart, I think it's great to bring somebody else in the room. Honestly, not so much that I don't trust you, it's that I don't trust our culture. I don't trust that what you said you did, if they were to say you did something else, that you would be safe. That if somebody accused you of something and there's no third party, how could you say that it didn't happen? And so I think it's about being wise. It's about saying, actually, I'm never by myself with them, not because I don't trust them or not trust myself, but because I don't trust the narrative that can get out there if I don't have parameters and boundaries. And so for me, if the narrative was Havilah was unfaithful, her husband on the road, I would say, nope, I have my own car. I have my own, I drive myself everywhere. I don't fly with anybody. So I have all these boundaries around it. And so I think it's important that you just go, if this is going to be an intimate moment, or if somebody opens up about an intimate part of their life, I think it's great to bring somebody in or bring their spouse or say, gosh, I'm so glad you opened up to me about this, but I think this couple over here is perfect for this. And being willing to just know good boundaries, even if they don't have good boundaries. Does that make sense? Like the average person isn't going to have good boundaries. They're going to think, well, why don't you want to talk about this? Why don't you want me to drive you? And they want to serve you, but they don't always understand what's at stake, and they don't always understand how the enemy works in your life or in our world. And so my suggestion is that you just keep things up like in the open so that the enemy can't keep things as secret. Another thing that I do, and again, I'm nervous sharing these because I don't want you to take it as like the Ten Commandments. These are just Havilah things. And sometimes I've done it. These are things that these are like guidelines. But sometimes I'll delete numbers or I'll block certain people. And it's not because I don't think that they're safe. There's something about it. I get on the road, they get my number. They work in a sound booth. You know, they're my tech guy. There's somebody at the airport. And I just have found that I want every door that can be opened to be closed. So I don't make it public, but I just oftentimes will delete a number. I'll block a number. I'll just remove them from my device or from whatever. They don't know that, but I think it's good just to like clean house and just not allow anything to be hanging out there. And so I like to do that. I think if there's any weird interactions with somebody, there are certain people that I tell my husband, I don't want their number on your phone. Like, I'm sorry. There's something about them. It's not that, I'm not being suspicious, but I feel a warning and I really want you to be careful. And he would say the same thing to me. And we try to honor each other in that relationship. So that's number 9, delete those numbers, block. You don't have to follow them on social media. Well, what if they get offended? Well, let them be offended. I'd rather stay married than, I'd rather have a healthy relationship. I'm not going to worry about their emotions if it's my future's at stake. So you got to be a little aggressive with what works for you in your life and what God is asking you to do. And then lastly, my 10th step is to seek a neutral third party when it comes to counseling, guidance, support, anything. I think it's important that you have somebody in your life, and all of you that are in ministry right now, I wish somebody had told me this. They didn't. And this has been profound for me. You want to be able to talk to someone who has no control over your salary, your relationships, your reputation, your future. If the only person you're getting counsel from has your paycheck, has your future, has your reputation, has your relationships, then you'll never fully be honest. And so my suggestion is that you find a place, someone that even legally isn't allowed to share everything, and open up, get it out, share it, because that's how you get healed. And so I see a lot of people get counsel from people that are not great. They're the ones that they're getting marriage counseling, and you find out later their marriage isn't safe, or they're getting counseling for a certain issue, and you go, now all of a sudden they're getting demoted or they're getting let go, and it's because they opened up. And sadly, people don't always have the capacity to hear your battle and see it apart from your job. And so I think that's really, really important. Okay, last thing, it's a bonus tip, but this is kind of something I live off of, which is if in doubt, don't do it. If in doubt, don't do it. You're allowed to change directions. If you've traveled with guys and you've driven with guys, and that's how you've done your life, and you go to lunch at work with a guy and you're married, don't do it. Just go, you know what? I'm changing the game. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm aware now, right? If you're a guy who's in ministry and you have interns around, or you have, these people on your worship team, and you're realizing that you're both showing up early together, then don't do it. Sit in your car until there's another person there, and then get out of your car. Those kind of things matter. And so if in doubt, don't do it. Stay aware and maintain those healthy boundaries, right? It's very important. So I would say if you have that check in your spirit, that little bit that says, I don't know why, but this feels weird. It shouldn't feel weird. If it feels weird, you should pause and back up. And if you're managing their emotions over and violating your integrity or violating what you said you were going to do, then you have to admit that you became the child in the relationship or you became the victim in the relationship. And now I've got to rise up and say, no, it doesn't really matter if that hurts your feelings. I know what's at stake and I'm not going to lean into that. So why is this important? Well, I think it's important that we remember that knowing yourself, knowing myself, setting boundaries and getting rooted in biblical principles are the key, the foundation to having healthy and respectful relationships in ministry and then in beyond, right? And so I hope that these tips guide you in upholding boundaries that honor God, they honor you, they honor those around you, and they help the next generation live respectful, healthy lives. Now, I know a top 10 list is not going to protect us from people that are predators, people that have been victimized. I understand that. I'm not ignorant. I understand that not everything fits in a top 10 list. These are just simple things that we have to start somewhere. And that's my heart. Can we start somewhere? Can we start with number one, don't travel alone unless you have to. Number two, don't text late at night or DM late at night or be in their DMs, stay out of their DMs. Number three, number four, be honest about your chemistry with others and be honest with yourself, be honest with your spouse, be honest with your best friend. Just be honest about it. It'll help. Number five, if it's a secret, it's infidelity. So that really should clear it up. If you're wondering if it's inappropriate, if you haven't told them, then it is. And you need to cut it off and you need to be honest. Number six, don't change your boundaries for spiritual people, leaders, or fathers or mothers. Keep the same boundaries. You are an adult. God sees you as an adult, and it's important to have those boundaries. Number seven, don't discuss your marriage or sex life with the opposite sex unless they are a therapist or a doctor or someone in your life that has a history of being healthy and safe. I recommend that you go to somebody that is either your sex or as skilled and trained in it and has not just a moral boundary, but has an ethical boundary around it. Number eight, avoid intimate ministry moments. There's nothing more intimate than ministry, than being at the altar, than being in a deliverance. It's very intimate. It's the inner workings of our mind, will, and emotions. And so don't be naive about it. It can be very intimate. And you might think that it's a spiritual father, ministering to a spiritual daughter. But I think we need to be aware that it's in this day and age, it's not appropriate. We need to have more boundaries around what we think is appropriate and really protect. If you're a spiritual mother and you see a spiritual daughter vulnerable, then it's your job to stand up and say, no, actually as a daughter, no, as a beautiful woman, no, you're not doing that. You're not going there. And I hope that you've built the respect and trust that they listen to you. And then ninth is simply to delete the numbers, block, get rid of, unfollow. You don't need to feel ashamed. Protect yourself. You're allowed to do that. And if anything gets fishy, throw it out. No big deal. And then number 10, seek a neutral third party. I hope you have somebody in your life that you can go to for guidance and that they don't pay your paycheck and they don't hold your relationships, your reputation, or your net worth in their hands. And then lastly, bonus tip, if in doubt, don't do it. It's not worth it. There's too much at stake. Your life is too short. Your calling is too great to be stupid. So I love you guys so much. I hope that this has helped you. And I hope that these stood out to you. If one of them stood out to you and it really spoke to you, would you let me know? Would you throw it in the comments or throw it in the reviews and let me know, hey, that comment, that thought, I had never thought of it before. That really helped me. I would love that. You guys, I hope this has been helpful. I love you. Again, these are guidelines, not rules. And I hope it started the conversation. No matter what your guidelines will be, I hope that this gives you a starting point. All right, you guys, until next time. Bye-bye.